Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for coming to this talk on quantized pi twisters, split octonions, and the magic square. So lots of words in there, and we'll start by introducing each one of them and how they are related to physics. So this is the structure of the talk. We start by introducing division algebras and split division algebras. Then we talk about the magic square of division algebras, following which we introduce twisters and how they are related to conformal geometry. The crux of this talk will be to show the relationship between split octonions and quantized pi twisters. Towards the end, we'll talk about future work in this field and some grand unified theories. Okay. So naively, a division algebra can be defined as an algebra which has the notion of divisibility or inversion. And there is a mathematical theorem which states that there can be only four normed division algebras: the real numbers, the complex numbers, the quaternions, and the octonions. So there is a standard method of constructing these division algebras. It's called the Cayley-Dixon method. And using this method, if we construct division algebras, it can be shown that we cannot go further like octonions in this series. So we all know about the real numbers and the complex numbers. The next division algebra in this series is that of the quaternions. So a quaternion has three imaginary directions, I, j, and k, each of them square to minus 1, just as iota squares to minus 1 in the complex numbers. The algebra of the quaternions can be described visually using this diagram here. So it is a non-commutative algebra, so I times j is not j times I, it's minus j times I. If we follow the direction of the arrows, then I times j gives us k with a positive sign, and k times I gives us j again. But if we go against the direction of the arrows, we can see that j times I will give us minus k. So this algebra is similar to the algebra of the polymatrices. A split quaternion has exactly the same algebra as that of the quaternions, except for the fact that j and k square to plus 1 instead of minus 1. So why we are calling them split quaternions, we'll come to that later. The next division algebra in this series is that of the octonions. Octonions have 7 imaginary directions, E1, E2 up to E7. All 7 of them square to minus 1. And the algebra can be described using this diagram here, which is also called the Fano plane. So there are 7 sides in this triangle: the 3 sides of the triangle, the 3 altitudes, and the inner circle. Each side corresponds to a quaternionic triplet. So E6, E1, and E5, for example, in this side of the triangle, are a quaternionic triplet. The algebra is like, if we follow the direction of the line, we get a positive sign, and if we go against the direction of the lines, we get a minus sign. So E6 times E1 will give us E5. E1 times E5 will give us E6 because they are a quaternionic triplet. But if we go against the direction of the lines, E5 times E1 will give us minus E6. So the algebra defined this way using this diagram, it can be checked that it is not associative. So real numbers have the notion of order, so we can define greater than or less than. Complex numbers don't have the notion of order, but they are commutative. Quaternions are not commutative, but are associative. And octonions are not associative as well. Again, split octonions has the same algebra as that of the octonions described using this Fano plane. The only difference is that 4 of these imaginary units square to plus 1 instead of squaring to minus 1. So in this case, E3, E5, E6, and E7 will square to plus 1. So why are we calling the split quaternions and split octonions as split division algebras? So just as we have the notion of complex conjugation in complex numbers, we can define quaternionic conjugation and octonionic conjugation in the following way. So just as iota goes to minus iota in complex conjugation, these imaginary units in the octonions go to minus times themselves when we take an octonionic conjugate. And we can define a norm, just as we define a norm in case of complex numbers, which is the number multiplied with its complex conjugate. And in case of complex numbers, we know that a number multiplied to its complex conjugate gives us mod of real part square plus mod of imaginary part square. Similarly, in case of octonions, we'll get a naught square, which is along e naught, which is the real direction, and then the imaginary part square, which is these seven numbers. So the signature that we obtain in this case is 8,0 signature, which is real valued. But in the case of split octonions, because E3, E5, E6, and E7 square to plus 1 instead of squaring to minus 1, we can check that the signature defined using this norm is 4,4 real valued signature. So because the signature is 4,4 in case of split octonions and 2,2 in case of split quaternions, they are called split division algebras. But this is slightly misleading because split quaternions and split octonions are not a division algebra. So we now define the magic square of division algebras. This was first figured out by Freudenthal and Tetz in 1958. So the idea is to take 3×3 matrices with entries in K prime and K, where K prime and K are division algebras. And for different entries in K prime and K, we see that these 3×3 matrices will generate certain Lie algebras. So Killing and Cartan were the first to classify compact Lie algebras, and they showed that it can be classified into classical Lie algebras, which is SO2N, the orthogonal group, SO2N plus 1, orthogonal odd dimensional group, SUN, which is the unitary group, and SP2N, which is the symplectic group. So all these classical Lie algebras can be understood in terms of real numbers, complex numbers, and quaternions. But Killing and Cartan also found that there are 5 exceptional Lie algebras which could not be classified into the classical Lie algebras. Those are G2, F4, E6, E7, and E8. And all those 5 exceptional Lie algebras are related to the octonions. So there is another 2×2 version of the magic square, which was presented by Barton and Sudbury in their paper. So it's again the same idea, where you take 2×2 matrices with entries in division algebras, and you can get matrices which generate certain Lie algebras. But one interesting thing to note in the paper by Barton and Sudbury is that they take 2×2, they also introduce another magic square where you take 2×2 matrices with entries in division algebras R, C, H, and O. Also, K prime this time is split division algebra. So R, C, H, and O with the tilde here is the split division algebra. And since the split division algebra have a pseudo signature, so they have a 4,4 and a 2,2 type of signature, the Lie algebra generated in this case is non-compact. And from physics point of view, there has been a lot of work in showing how the octonions are related to particle physics and internal gate symmetries. Because as we showed that we can get the algebra of the quaternions is similar to that of Pauli matrices, we can show that we can get Gell-Mann matrices from the algebra of octonions. So, and a lot of work has been done in terms of understanding symmetry breaking of internal gauge groups like SO10 via this 2×2 division algebra magic square. But what is interesting is that if we look at this magic square, which has split and non-split division algebras, we can try to understand space-time symmetries and conformal geometry. Especially the second row and the third row in this magic square is especially very interesting, because the second row is the group of isometries in 2,1, 3,1, 5,1, and 9,1 dimensional space-times, which is very important for supersymmetric theories. The third row is also important because the third row corresponds to the conformal group of 2,1, 3, Minkowski spacetimes in 4, 6, and 10 dimensions. So the crux of this talk will be to see how the split division algebras are related to spacetime or external symmetries in terms of twisters. So we start by introducing what a twister is. A twister space is a subspace of CP3 or the projective space of C4. What it means is that it is composed of four complex valued numbers up to a rescaling. And it does not include the origin of C4. So it does not have 0, 0, 0, 0. But strictly speaking, the twister space is not exactly CP3, but a subspace of CP3. So there are some additional constraints. The constraints are that the first two indices of the twister do not live in C2, but they live in CP1. So they are two complex valued numbers defined up to a rescaling, and they cannot be 0, 0. The same is true for the last two indices of the twister. So they live in CP1 as well. It is a matter of conventional notation that the first two indices are represented without a dot, whereas the last two indices are represented with a dot. The first two indices of a twister are related to the last two indices of a twister via the twister incidence relation, which is given here. Here, X alpha alpha dot is a 2x2 matrix with entries in T, X, Y, and Z, where T, X, Y, and Z are the space-time coordinates. But the important thing to notice here is that these space-time coordinates are no longer real, but complex valued numbers. So this X alpha alpha dot corresponds to a complex space-time. And we can get real space-times with different signatures by taking different slices in this complex space-time. What this means is that if we put additional constraints on T, X, Y, and Z to be either purely imaginary, purely real, or a combination of both, we can get real space-times with signature that is Euclidean 3,1, Euclidean 4,0, Lorentzian 3,1, or De Sitter 2,2. Any P, Q dimensional space-time has the conformal group, which is the orthonormal group P plus 1, comma Q plus 1, except for two-dimensional space. So why this is true, we'll look at it geometrically later on. But following from this point, we can see that the conformal group of Minkowski spacetime is O4, comma 2. And if we are working with the simply connected part of it, the group will be SO4, comma 2. So another way of looking at twisters is that twisters are spinners of complexified conformal group. What that means is that if we complexify the conformal group, which is SO4, comma 2, the group that we will get is SO6, comma C, which is SO6, but over the scalar field of complex numbers. And twisters have an invariant inner product under SL4, comma C, which is the double cover of SO6, comma C. So twisters are spinners of SO6, comma C, or the complexified conformal group. In the last slide, we saw how if we take different slices of the complexified spacetime, we can get real spacetimes with different signature, like Euclidean, Lorentzian, or De Sitter. But the spacetime is related to the twister coordinates, and taking different real slices in complexified spacetime will put additional constraints on the twisters as well. So if we take a real slice from complexified spacetime, it will put an additional constraint on the twisters in such a way that the twister will now be a spinner of the conformal group corresponding to that particular spacetime. So for an example, suppose we take a real slice of the complexified spacetime, which gives us Lorentzian spacetime signature. Then this will put additional constraints on the twister such that the dual twister, which is a map from twister space to complex numbers, will be defined in a particular way. So the first two indices, Z0 and Z1, have been swapped with the last two indices, Z2 and Z3, and there's a complex conjugation. If we take the inner product of a twister, whether it's dual twister, we see that we get a real number with a signature 2,2. So this inner product is invariant under SU2,2, which is the double cover of SO4,2. Which is the conformal group of Lorentz spacetime. So taking different slices of complexified spacetime gives us real spacetimes with different signatures. And it also gives us twisters, which are spinners of the conformal group corresponding to that particular real spacetime. We also mentioned that the conformal group corresponding to a P, Q dimensional spacetime is orthogonal group p plus 1 comma q plus 1. We'll now try to see why this is geometrically true. So a twister lives in CP3, which means it has four complex valued numbers, so 8 degrees of freedom, but only up to a rescaling. So we have to subtract one complex degree of freedom. So 8 minus 2, we have 6 real degrees of freedom now. And suppose we are working with Lorentzian twisters, so it has 6 real degrees of freedom and it transforms under SO4, 2. So it has 2 time-like directions and 4 space-like directions. If we think of a Lorentzian null twister, the null cone in 4, 2 dimensions will be given by this equation. Now suppose we take a space-like hypersurface, which is V is equal to constant, where V is a time-like direction. The intersection of the space-like hypersurface with this null cone will give us the following relation. So this surface, which is the intersection of the space-like surface with the Lorentzian null twister, is just a 4-dimensional hyperbolic surface living in 5 dimensions. And from this 4-dimensional hyperbolic surface, we can project back to get our original Minkowski space cone. So because of this geometrical idea, we can think of the conformal group of p, q dimension spacetime as orthogonal group e plus 1, q plus 1. In order to provide a better visualization, I take the example of 2D space. So corresponding to 2D space, the group is SO2 plus 1, 1. This is just for an example. The conformal group of 2D plane is infinite dimensional, however. So if we take the case of SO2 plus 1, 1, this is just Minkowski space, and the null cone in Minkowski space is given as following, via the following equation. If we take a space-like hypersurface, P is equal to constant, the intersection of the hypersurface with the null cone will give us S2, or the Riemann sphere. From this S2, we can do a stereographic projection to get back our original space, which was R2, the two-dimensional plane. So Penrose calls this two-dimensional sphere, S2, as the compactified plane, because the infinities in the two-dimensional plane are being identified with just one point, which is the North Pole in this case. Similarly, the hyperbola, the four-dimensional hyperbolic surface, which we described in the previous slide, can be thought of as compactified Minkowski space, where the future null-like infinity, the past null-like infinity, and the space-like infinity at t equal to 0 have to be identified with just one point. So we have seen twisters and conformal geometry. We will now see how twisters are related to split octonions and why we can understand space-time symmetries using split octonions. So we take a bi-twister, which is nothing but just a pair of a twister and its dual twister. So it has 8 degrees of freedom. And we take a quantized bi-twister, which means that this twister follows a particular quantum commutation relation similar to X and P operators in quantum mechanics. We will now try to create an algebraic structure O using Z and W as the basis of that algebra. Here, A alpha is just any classical twister which commutes with all other twisters, but Z and W are quantum bi-twisters, so they follow the following commutation relation. So we have an algebraic structure now, but we don't know yet whether this is an algebra. In order to see that, we need to define an inner product, a bilinear vector product on this algebra. So first we can define a scalar product, which is just like a scalar multiplication, where nu is an element of the scalar field. It can be a real number or a complex number. The inner product between two elements curly A and curly B living in this algebraic structure O can be defined in the following way. So I is a map from the algebraic structure, any element living in the algebraic structure O, to another element living in this structure. And the inner product between two elements A, curly A and curly B can be defined with the following expression. Here the product between A and I times B naturally is the product between two twisters. So in this algebraic structure, we are inheriting the algebraic product between two twisters. And if we do that, along with using the commutation relations given in the previous slide between Z and W, it can be seen that this expression simplifies to the following form. This expression can further be simplified, and what we finally get is a real valued number with 4,4 signature. So what we see here is that we have an algebraic structure with a well-defined inner product, and that inner product gives a 4,4 split signature, just like that of the split octonions. So we are already getting the hint that this algebraic structure is that of the split octonions, but we don't have the notion of bilinear vector product yet. So in order to define a bilinear product on this algebra, we first define identity. An identity in this algebraic structure O is just an element of the algebraic structure whose dot product with itself is 2. And any element early A living in this algebra O can be decomposed into two parts. Curly AS is the part along the direction of the identity. This is similar to complex numbers where you can decompose it as along identity, the real part, and one direction which is perpendicular to identity, the imaginary part. So AV is the direction which is perpendicular to the identity. And in order to define a bilinear vector product, we take two elements, curly A and curly B, living in the algebra. And their product should also live in the algebra. So using the decomposition that we just described, curly A can be written as curly AS plus curly AV. Similarly, curly B can be written as curly BS plus curly BV. AS and BS are just numbers, so their product is another number which is along identity. The inner product of AV and BV is another scalar which is along identity. AV is perpendicular to the identity and BS is a scalar, so their product will be perpendicular to the identity. Similarly, AS product with BV will be perpendicular to the identity. But in order to define AV product BV, we need to define how they multiply with each other. For example, in complex numbers, any real scalar multiplied to iota is just that real scalar times iota. That is AS times BV. But we also need to introduce what iota times iota is. And in order to introduce how the imaginary parts multiply with each other, we introduce a triple product. So a triple product between three elements living in this algebra, curly A, curly B, and curly C, is just the cyclic permutation of A, B, and C. If the permutation is even, we get a plus sign. And if the permutation is odd, we get a minus sign. The bilinear product between any two elements in this algebra which are perpendicular to the identity is given by the following triple product between those two numbers and the identity. So if we define the bilinear product in this way, we can check that this algebra is not associative, it is alternative, and it is a composition algebra. Also, we saw that the inner product defined on this algebra has a 4,4 split signature. So all these things are telling us that this is the algebra of the split octonions. So in order to conclude, there has been a lot of work in understanding internal gate symmetries and symmetries of the standard model using octonions. Through this work, we can see how external symmetries or space-time symmetries can also be understood using the split octonions. Future work in this direction would include getting the algebra of the octonions using SU4 spinners instead of SU2,2 spinners that we did. An interesting thing to note here is that SU4 is the double cover of SO6,C, the double cover of SO6, which is not the conformal group corresponding to any spacetime. So this could motivate the idea as to why internal gate symmetries are internal and do not correspond to any actual physical geometrical spacetime. Another future work could be to investigate the fermionic or anti-commutation relationships instead of the bosonic commutation relationships that we introduced in the talk. And people are also investigating looking into the algebra, which is composed of both octonions and split octonions, in order to get higher dimensional gauge groups, which can be the gauge groups of grand unified theories, which explain internal gauge symmetry apart from space-like symmetry. SO12,4 here, for example, is interesting because it breaks into SO10 plus SO2,4. SO10 is the grand unified gauge group for SO10 theories, and SO2,4 is the conformal group of Minkowski spacetime. So on this note, I would like to end my talk. Thank you.
Questions. Okay. The algebra O, is it associative?
No, it's not.
And in this,
yeah. So I is the map which I described in my previous slide. So it's a map from O to O.
I had a question about the magic square, the second one, where I think, yeah, that one. I think it's just that I don't understand it. But when you go from R to C to H to L, the size of the group jumps by 1, 2, and 4, mm-hmm. corresponding to how many more imaginary directions you add. Is there any real connection between why the magic square is doing that and on the left side?
This side?
Yeah. And so when you go from reals to complex, you add one imaginary direction and it jumps from SO2 to SO3, mm-hmm. and so on and so on. Is there a reason?
Definitely, like, the directions are increasing. So the dimension of the generators are increasing, and it can generate higher dimensional E groups. So that's all I can say for now, but yeah.
Is there people working in something similar to this, but in the sitter, like in different signatures? And can you construct like different split things, but for a generic, like for a generic signature in a generic part?
Yeah, like this is an interesting question because if we take a real slice of the complexified spacetime, one of the slices could be T sitter signature, and the twister that we will get in that case will be the spinner of SO3,3, and that is, I think, SL2R times SL2R, and people are working on that. Maybe there are certain algebras which we can describe just the way we did split octonions for Lorentzian case, so that could be interesting.
One last question. Is there, like, do you understand any way, any geometric way of, like, any geometric way of understanding the quantum, the commutation relation that you introduced in that?
Yeah, that's also another interesting question. So, Penrose says that the quantum commutation relation of the twisters is equivalent to the commutation relations between angular momentum, but it's equivalent and not equal. So there is not a very good understanding of quantum commutation relationship between twisters, so there still needs to be a physical understanding.
I think that's all.